present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Bournemouth Echo, read by Charlotte Green.
A pub landlady has described the harrowing but vital moments after she realised her pub was on fire. The smoke was at first thought to have been coming from a smoke machine, until the DJ pointed out he didn't have one.
And our thanks to David Fox for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Danielle Ward. And opposite them on my left, Fred McCauley and Andy Hamilton. Jeremy, who started work with an abundance of caution?
It's been a great week. I was able to spend all of Tuesday watching television all day and call it work. It was fantastic. It was Tuesday, wasn't it? Yeah. But it was. It was a wonderful day. But that poor bloke's been blamed for Obama messing up his swearing in.
He did it again, though, in private, didn't he?
Yeah, they had a private one because they decided it didn't count, that one. So all that time, he wasn't really the president. It wasn't terribly inspiring, the speech. The best bloke was the old bloke from the Civil Rights Movement who did the benediction. He was fantastic.
I quite like the fact that it was to the point and straightforward. Because the thing with George W. Bush when he was making his speeches, and he got more like this towards the end, like rather than delivering it like a statesman, he'd lean over and deliver it like someone who was looking for a fight or on the pull. In many ways he was, so...
I mean, it was just nice to hear a president speak fluently and in English. I mean, I thought the ceremony, well, it was moving. I thought there were blips. The lady who was the sort of MC, who kept coming up to the mic and introducing the acts, had a bit of a speech impediment going. So, I don't know if you noticed, she kept saying, the oath of office. And they cut to Bush after one. I thought the poet lady who read her poem, I thought she took advantage of the fact that she was standing behind a bulletproof shield. Because she did that, not only did she do an interminable poem, what she had written, but she did the poet's voice, didn't she? It's the only time you ever hear it is when people are reading their own poetry and they intone in that way and to try to make it sound deep and lyrical. And it went on for bloody hours.
Slightly appalled that Obama chose Rick Warren to be the pastor for the occasion. I mean, this man is a serious fundamentalist. He's a hideous homophobic and...
Was he the first guy? Was he the opening act?
Yeah, he was the opening.
It was like going to see Chris Rock and finding out you've got Jim Davidson on first, wasn't it?
Coverage amazing though, because obviously rolling news is a big thing now and they just commentate on everything. My favourite thing that happened was someone on the BBC was going, well, there's Michelle Obama, she's stood next to Bill Clinton. She's a little bit shorter than him. You've just told me someone is not the same height as someone else on a news channel. That's amazing.
And it wasn't even radio, you're watching,
yeah,
you're looking at,
oh, out.
Thanks, because I couldn't have figured that out. I appreciate it. He's going to close Guantanamo, though. It's going to be difficult. There are sitting tenants, but... President Barack Hussein Obama took the oath of office twice, in fact, after he and the Chief Justice fluffed their lines at the inauguration. The oath was particularly embarrassing as an error for Obama. He used to lecture on constitutional law. It would have been like Bush making an error on something he knew lots about. 2 points to Jeremy. Danielle, who's taken receipt of a brand new U-turn?
Oh, of course, this is the ever-changing story of the vote on MPs' expenses that was supposed to happen this week and didn't. Because the Freedom of Information Act was brought in so we could all know about things that are concerned, so as taxpayers we could find out where our money's going. And they said, yeah, that's great, apart from us, because what if I want to buy a sex swing or some antique swords? People will find out. Originally, there was a three-line whip behind it.
Does that go with the sex swing?
You know more about Harriet Harman than me, surely.
Sorry, I'd got Ruth Kelly in my head. That's a terrible thing.
They said it's too expensive to publish the results. Not as expensive as giving people money for doing nothing, surely.
But it would be, because it would be about 1 million receipts. All you need, really, is sort of a 2-mile-high spike.
But do you think anybody really wants to see it all? See all the stuff? Find out what they really do?
It's more fun going through their bins.
Yeah, that's true. We can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Gordon Brown has abandoned plans to hold a vote over the proposal to exempt MPs' expenses from the Freedom of Information Act after the other parties said they would not support it. Freedom of Information requests generally cover all public servants, but the Prime Minister is said to believe that MPs are a special case. And certainly if Lembit Opik is anything to go by, I can see his point. There are some embarrassing revelations. Alistair Darling spends £22,000 a year on Just for Men. Can I just say that's a hair dye, not some dubious magazine? Can I just be... So, 2 points to Danielle. Fred, have a listen to this. Fred, why is the Royal Bank of Scotland not worth sharing with?
Yeah, it's not been a good week, Sandy, but I know that 10% of nothing is nothing, so I've kind of lost interest, and to be honest, I honestly don't care.
2 points, because it is, in fact, what I'd written down here. I'm sure we've got lots of Evan Davis-related things to say, but I'm going to give you 2 points and move on, Fred.
Thank you very much.
Andy, which big beast came out of the shadows this week?
Oh, you never see the back of anybody anymore, do you, eh? Everyone comes back. Peter Mandelson, Kenneth Clark, and take that. The IMF, I see they're making a comeback. This is David Cameron has invited Kenneth Clark into the shadow cabinet. Well, I think it's that classic thing that if you survive long enough in British public life, you become cuddly, don't you? Because he, you know, what's he known for? He's known for liking a cigar, liking jazz, drinking beer, and what's that other thing? Oh, yes, being a member of the most repressive government we've had this century.
Which is last century.
You know, I mean, he's... Oh, yeah, last century.
But it was a valid point.
It was. It's just I was in the wrong century. Which is happening to me more and more. But anyway, so he's back, basically.
It is a bit like poker, isn't it? I'll see your Mandelson and I'll raise your Clark.
Actually, Mandelson welcomed Ken Clark back, saying he was an old political friend. And you think, isn't it funny how the word friend doesn't sound all that friendly if you put another word in front of it? Well, ask Prince Harry. Ken Clark has been brought back to the Tory front bench to be shadow business secretary. Clark gets to be Peter Mandelson's shadow. I didn't know he had one. Oh, no, wait a minute, I was thinking of Michael Howard, I'm sorry. Ken Clark said he had decided that it was time to stop enjoying myself on the back benches. Good idea, Ken, you'll go blind. At the end of round one, I can tell you the scores are Jeremy and Danielle have got 6 points, but so too have Fred and Andy.
Oh, well done us.
We start round two with a cutting from the Kent Messenger.
Maidstone United Football Club boss Lloyd Hume has admitted that the cold snap has badly affected their training arrangements. He said the snow and frost meant we've only been able to do fitness work and haven't had balls out for a fortnight.
Dirty, dirty cow. It's not like this when Harriet Cass is on the programme.
And our thanks to Alan Muggeridge of Maidstone for sending us that. Jeremy, which patients are hoping for a more robust constitution?
This is the new NHS constitution, not a week in which to bring out a constitution. It's been the inauguration of the first black president of the United States. The words constitution have a whole different sort of gravitas in a week like that. This is just a sort of NHS sort of guideline or doctors saying to patients, you can have osteopathy if you want, or you can have Nurofen. And I'm sick of all this choice. I don't even like... There's too much choice in restaurants. I'm 47. Why can't you have restaurants where they just give you tea on your lap in front of the telly? 6:30. And get them to tell me what's best for me.
It's even when you get in a taxi and the taxi driver says, which way do you want to go then? It's just like, well, I don't know. I once got in a taxi and the bloke said, what do you think's the quickest way to get there? I said, I thought, in a taxi.
If Fat people aren't going to be discriminated against, though. That's in the NHS constitution. Was they it? Won't withhold treatment, but might withhold
food. That's a new thing.
They'll just narrow the doors. That way it's not... it's not discrimination. It's just they can't get in the building.
On the fat-busting drugs, because they're sold over the counter at chemists, you're only allowed to buy them if you're fat. How terrible if you go and test, just go, I think I'm all right, but I'll see if I can get any. And they go, have as many as you want. Your self-esteem.
That would be bad. The chemist turns to their friend and goes, oh, look, she wants those to come in for those fat pills.
Just wanted toothpaste, but thanks.
They're going to need some objective measure of obesity, aren't they? They probably have a sort of a black cardboard cutout, you know, and you have to stand in front of it, and a bit like that. You can't go on this ride if you're not...
It's your BMI is the thing, and my children have got this thing called a Wii Fit. It's a sort of computer game, and you have to stand on this board, and you make a little computer figure of yourself, and then you can do various exercises. So I made a little computer... They thought it was hilarious. I made a little computer figure of myself with a big moustache and glasses. And then it weighs you by itself, and it weighed me, and it suddenly said, your BMI is a fantastic figure. And my little computer figure suddenly went twice the size. It just... It's the most depressing thing I've ever seen. NHS patients will be protected by a new constitution, effectively a Bill of Rights for the health service. Health Secretary Alan Johnson said the £1 million cost of producing the document was small beer. Heavens, must drink in some very expensive bars.
Maybe I think the constitution should open up with the words, we hold these truths to be self-evident. Reflexology is bollocks.
2 points to Jeremy. Danielle, who wants a slice of Auntie's pie?
Channel 4 are in trouble. They have no money, and Ofcom are trying to find a way of keeping Channel 4 afloat. My favourite suggestion, the one that they and Channel 4 don't want, is Channel 4 and Channel 5 merging, which would be terrible. That is like letting two slow cousins inbreed.
Why are they in such trouble? Do we know why? Has the bottom fallen out of the property programme market?
It's advertising it, because Channel 4 have got a remit to make good programmes, and they're
arguing... Really?
Because it's true, there are only so many times you can watch an overweight American being hoisted out of their own house before you know what the story is.
That was a hell of a programme, though. Did you see
that? I mean, it really is appalling. They're just kind of, oh, today we're going to follow Brian, he's gone down to the shops to buy a paper. Hello, newskeeper. Yeah, I'd like a paper. That'll be 80 pence. Ooh, 80, you say? Well, I might try next door. Next door they went, and it was 80 pence as well, so Brian bought it. Join us again next week when Angela Rippon buys a Mars bar with Max.
Did you call the man in the shop newskeeper? I like newskeeper. That.
It's a hybrid between a shopkeeper and a newsagent.
I'm going to try a good morrow, newskeeper.
So it's quite damning of ITV, though, because they said Channel 4 needs to make great programmes, the BBC needs to make great programmes. ITV, that can remain for the gumbos, though.
One of the proposals, I think, which might be imposed on Channel 4 is that if there is some kind of support from the BBC, they'll be expected to do children's programming again, and they'll have to drop Deal or No Deal. They'll have to butcher...
I didn't know Noel was in.
It said so much about Channel 4 that it was Channel 4 who rehabilitated Noel Evans. And it's like, he just appeared on the television. You sort of think, well, aren't we supposed to get a letter from the police telling us he's back in circulation?
But he was away for ages, and when he came back, he looked exactly the same. Do you suppose he'd been cryogenically frozen? The BBC could be forced to share its licence fee with Channel 4 under new recommendations from the media regulator Ofcom. Channel 4 is facing a lack of cash due to falling advertising revenues. Oh, I knew they were in trouble when I saw Jon Snow doing the news topless. 2 points to Danielle. Fred, who says heaven on earth is just under the stairs?
The Archbishops of Canterbury and York got together and said, in this busy world that we all live in, it might not be possible always to get to a church, but you should have a little sanctuary in your own home, and it can be the garden shed or a garage or, indeed, the cupboard under the stairs. If you want to have your little prayer cupboard under the stairs, you can decorate it with perhaps a picture of Jesus Christ or maybe a postcard, he said, or maybe some pebbles and feathers. And we've got a little sanctuary in the Macaulay household under the stairs, which is decorated with coats and outdoor shoes and a vacuum cleaner. And the little scratching of children's fingernails on the wood. But, you know, it's I often point out the difference between Scotland and England. And way up in the northwest of Scotland, we've got the Free Presbyterian Church of Scotland, who will be saying, if you'd like to turn your house into a little prayer place, why not strip out the carpets, take the wallpaper off the wall, throw out the furniture and get on your knees and beg forgiveness! Perhaps, if you're a Roman Catholic, you might want to make a little confessional booth out of the fire guard and a curtain.
Cupboard is tiny, and I mean, the poor gas man has enough trouble reading the meter without full communion getting in the way. I mean, our whole family would fit under the stairs for a mass, but it...
My mum makes you take your shoes off when you go in our hallway, so I don't know if she's turned it into a mosque or something.
It's quite short-sighted, isn't it, of church leaders to suggest that religious devotion be transferred away from the church. Do you think that 2 years from now they'll be sitting in an empty church thinking, well, I don't know, attendances have really dropped off?
A Church of England booklet produced for Lent suggests families find a place at home to build a prayer den. For instance, the cupboard under the stairs. Actually, our cupboard has got a gas meter in it. Can you imagine if the reading was 666 just by chance? 2 points to Fred. Andy, why
am I... Sandy, you're playing with forces more evil and powerful than you can possibly understand.
I know, but we'd booked you ages ago. Andy, why might science get under your skin?
Oh, we know.
Go on, then.
No, no, wait, mate, you might know it in a nanosecond.
They don't know. Oh, that's too big of a clue.
Might know it in a nanosecond.
Oh, I know.
Yes?
It's the Incredible Journey thing. You've seen the film where Raquel Welsh... I'm just going to pause there for a moment. Just for men of a certain age.
Can I just say for the ladies that are listening, and Donald Pleasance.
Yes, Donald Pleasance. And there's a diplomat, and he's very important, and he's going to die because he's got some kind of blood clot. So what they do, they miniaturise these people inside a tiny, tiny submarine. They inject it into the man's bloodstream, and then they go through all his blood vessels and everything. But they don't know that Donald Pleasance is a spy for the enemy, and he tries to sabotage the whole thing, and then all the antibodies come in, and Donald Pleasance says, no, no, no. And then the others say, oh, but we can't get out. And the one says, ah, the tear duct. And he gets a microscope out, and he looks at his eye, and you can see this tiny, tiny Raquel Welsh coming out. And then they're safe. And then he's safe. Well, Donald Pleasance isn't safe. Yeah. He's still bad.
What's the answer to the question?
These scientists are so clever that they can do that now.
I thought Incredible Journey was a dog and the cat crossing America together.
It's Fantastic Voyage, not Incredible Journey. Okay,
well, it's an adjective and a noun. What more do you want?
I just wonder if we could get a bit closer to the news. These scientists, yeah. Do you want to pick a continent where they come from or anything else about them?
Oh, I know they can do this nanotechnology. Yeah. They will be sending...
Who
many
are they?
Scientists. They're
scientists.
Sandy. They're scientists, Sandy, and they reckon that they can do this nanotechnology. They can send little robot thingy-me-bobs and they'll disperse anything you've got in your bloodstream that you shouldn't have and come out through your tear duct.
So it's basically... it's exactly what Andy said, but without Raquel Welsh.
Right, well, what a fantastic amount of detail. Australian scientists have developed a tiny robot that could be injected into a patient's bloodstream to perform life-saving operations. Australians inventing something that gets under your skin. Makes a change from Rolf Harris getting on your tits. So, I'm only going to give you 1 point there, Andy. I don't think you fully were cognizant of the story.
And you say that.
So, at the end of round two, Fred and Andy have got 9 points, but Jeremy and Danielle have leapt into the lead with 11. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from a school prospectus.
The Buckingham School, vibrant sixth form, state-of-the-art science facilities.
And our thanks to Dr. David Noy for sending us that. Danielle, whose fishy story had an ice ending?
the Burmese fishermen who were adrift off the coast of Australia for 25 days in an icebox. They were found off the coast and everyone went, wow, this is amazing. How did you stay alive for so long and what did you eat? And it turned out they were eating bird vomit. So, yeah, this is true. No, they were taken to hospital and they weren't that dehydrated considering they were adrift for 25 days. And now that people are starting to question whether this is a true story, I think it might be a promotion campaign for Mr. Frosty's icebox.
Findus bird's vomit.
Yeah. The odd thing is, why would the bird land to... Yeah, I mean, can they not vomit and fly at the same time?
Have you ever tried it, Andy?
And I'd like to know if there was any ice in the icebox when they first took to the water.
You've been watching too many episodes of Taggart, you really have.
There's something
I still don't quite understand, Inspector.
A few wrappers from Wall's ice cream in the bottom of the box, isn't it?
Actually, we survived on bird vomit and mivvies.
Two shipwrecked Burmese fishermen have survived 25 days drifting off the coast of northern Australia inside an icebox. Rescuers saw two shirtless men floating in an orange vessel the size of a desk, leading them to question if it was an icebox or the Easy Cruise flagship. So 2 points to Danielle. Fred, why are the cheese-eating monkeys failing to surrender?
Is this world trade?
It is to do with trade.
It's Roquefort cheese, isn't it, which the Americans have landed a big duty on because
Europe was slapping an embargo, I think, or a very high tariff on hormone-fed beef. I mean, I think the cows were fed the hormones. I don't think they waited. There was a bit of beef. And then, or maybe, I don't know. Maybe. I'm better on movies.
Right. So it's a tit-for-tat kind of thing. They've said, right, OK, we're going to slap a duty on Roquefort cheese.
300% tariff they've put.
And then the French have said, well, you can try that, but we will put a duty on Coca-Cola. But not in that voice. But, I mean, if this goes on, just from my own personal point of view, imagine the knock-on effect on the Scottish oatcake industry.
Isn't it funny? That's a thought that hadn't crossed my mind, but yes. The French cheese producers have called on Obama to reverse the duty increase. And do you think the first morning, the chief of staff briefing him on all the list of intractable foreign policy things? Yeah. Israel, Palestine, Iran, weapons, France, cheese. Start with the easy one, Mr. President. Let's start with...
It's a shame he couldn't have worked it into the speech, wasn't it?
Yeah, it would have been good.
We will welcome your cheeses.
Quick supplementary on the food thing. Anybody know what's happening to frogs?
Yeah, they're getting eaten.
Yeah.
They are.
They're getting eaten.
To extinction.
Yeah. Globally.
Scientists from the University of Adelaide who issued the warning, they've called for the mandatory certification of frog harvests. It's ridiculous they don't grow in fields.
Do you know why?
Cane toads. Hmm?
The guy came up with the number of frogs' legs that are eaten in a year, and he said it's between 200 million... and a billion. So this man, here's the first guy out of the banking industry to get a new job. How many did you say? Ah, yeah, it's about 200 million or a billion or less.
But he did.
Or more.
He did have the brains to pick an even number, though, didn't he?
2 points to Fred. Andy, who was sick as a parrot this week?
Sick as a parrot?
Yes.
Well, there were a couple of parrot stories. There was a parrot that got taken to a football match.
Yes, that's the one.
What happened was this lady took him to a sort of amateur football match in the northeast somewhere, I think, and he's a parrot from Senegal, and he's a very good talker, and he started mimicking the ref's whistle, which caused a lot of confusion. And then I think he started mimicking the players as well. So he'd start going, man on, Gary! Man on! Give it and go! And my mum, when she was a little girl, they had a parrot that was a great talker, but that had belonged to a sailor. And they used to cover it when the vicar came round. And they put a cloth over the cage. And apparently the vicar would be sitting there and you just every now and then you'd hear, poor sod! I like doing parrot voices. It's right. My own vocal range is not that far from a parrot.
Fancy taking your parrot to a football match, unless you're trying to start a new joke. Maybe that person, I'll take my parrot to a football match, yeah. And then I'm going to take my newt to the pub. And then I'm going to find a Scotsman and an Irishman, and we'll all go for a job on a building site together.
Actually, it's been a bad week for stereotypes, because I picked up my paper and it said that the Royal Bank of Scotland had recklessly gambled away £29 billion. I thought, well, bang goes that national stereotype. What happened?
This is Mitu, a Senegal parrot who was barred from a football match in Hatfield for imitating the referee's whistle. Mitu has been threatened with a three-match ban and a weekend with Bill Oddie.
There was a pub in Brixton, and we used to go in this pub, and it had a parrot. He couldn't talk, he could whistle Colonel Bogey, but he could never get the last note. So he'd go... And this would go on for hours and hours, and people would be clenching their teeth and grinding their jaws. And then one night, he went... And there's a huge round of applause.
2 points to Andy. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Hardy.
Offered, ladies' briefs. 4 pair of new briefs, 2 white and 2 black, lycra and cotton mixed with light control. Can split.
Miss Ward.
This is from Kevin Heath, who found this on the Tesco recipe website. Individual beef Wellington, a truly scrumptious classic dish for one. Serves 2.
Mr. McCauley.
I take you back north of the border. From the Herald, we have Norse god stuns housebreaker. A builder scared off an intruder by running at him dressed as the Norse god Thor. You don't need much more, do you? And this is the bit I love. The intruder did not steal anything, but left his shoes.
Hamilton.
This is from Gary, and he's got it off a website, Kansas City, and it contains one of the most irrefutable quotes I've seen. Dudley Sharp, a victims advocate and pro-death penalty expert, thinks that the coming year will see more states questioning the use of the death penalty. Living murderers are much more likely to harm and murder again than are executed murderers. He said...
Let's take a look at the final score. Fred and Andy have got 14 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Danielle with 15. Before we leave you, here's a special offer from a photographer in Surrey sent in by Stephen Bell of Farnham.
Get your family shot over Christmas and New Year. Special packages available.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Danielle Ward, Fred McCauley and Andy Hamilton. In the chair was Sandy Togsmith, and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chair script was written by Simon Littlefield, Rodri Cooks and James Sherwood, with additional material by Stephen Carlin and Rory Stamp. The producer was Victoria Lloyd.